if it wasn't for the fact that I'm here giving talks and speaking to people, it probably would have been finished, like the core time chain for Kusama would have been finished by now.
This podcast is slowing down core time.
Yeah, so I mean, Jay is ruining the ecosystem.
The launch team wishes you good luck and Godspeed.
Space Monkeys blasting off with Donald Murray. He's a systems parachain engineer with Parity, working specifically lately on Core Time. Very lucky to have him with us. Donald, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We've been hearing a lot about Core Time in the Polkadot ecosystem lately. Some controversies, a lot of it based on misunderstandings, I think. Could you give us kind of a high-level understanding of what Core Time is?
If you think about block space and how it's allocated, or how you acquire it, at the minute you can only get a huge amount of block space on Polkadot. So you'll auction for a lease on a slot. And it tends to be 2 years long on Polkadot. And this is 2 years of exclusive access to a core. Obviously, that's a lot of blocks. You know, we're talking 10 million blocks at 6 second block times. So that's one way of using it, and there's no necessity for it to be that way. And so the aim of Agile Core Time is to introduce more flexibility and acknowledge that there are different requirements for how people use the Polkadot ubiquitous computer.
Yeah.
As we're now thinking about it. So it's kind of a shift in how you think about what Polkadot's actually offering, which is high quality block space.
So let's just break down a few ideas there. Block space, this is not just something that exists in Polkadot. Any blockchain has block space. We're talking about the space where you can fit data into a block,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then what do you mean when we say cores?
A core is a generalization of a slot. A slot was where you have the ability to validate one parachain. Whereas now we're saying that a core is more of a generic thing that doesn't have to just have one parachain attached to it. And so we're kind of leaving the parachain only model and saying that, or a full-time parachain only model, and saying that there are a lot of different ways that you can utilize this core.
Yeah.
So instead of it being a slot with an affinity to it, an exclusive affinity to a parachain, you've got where parachains can dip in and out, different cores can be scheduled by the relay chain scheduler, and that you can create algorithms to maximize the utilization of those cores. What we're really selling with any type of core time is the same thing. It's block space. It's about 5 megabytes, or you know, you can call it a few megabytes of availability, and about, you know, 2 seconds of execution.
Yeah.
Thinking about it in terms of cores is drawing the analogy with a classical server or a computer.
Sure.
And I mean, the point that Gavin makes when he talks about it is that Polkadot, and rightly so, is that Polkadot is a supercomputer, a global distributed supercomputer. So the Polkadot ubiquitous computer.
Yeah.
So if you think about that in terms of cores, then you can draw a one-to-one analogy with the cores of a CPU on a computer, or the cores available for a supercomputer.
Incredible. So when they put you on this project, how did they describe it to you?
So I actually, it was week 3 of me joining Parity.
Okay.
And like, I'm relatively new to blockchain as well.
Okay. How long ago was that when you joined?
This was middle of September last year.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So right. I'm green.
Yeah. Hey.
Green but keen.
Yeah.
When I first joined, my background is in particle physics and kind of like system level or system programming. And quite a bit to do with algorithms and thinking on those terms.
Sure.
And also I sort of dabble a lot in kind of Linux, and I'm really interested in how kernels work and all of that kind of stuff. So when I heard about Core Time, it was just in a kind of a chance encounter, just talking about it at one of the retreats. So there was a Parity retreat 2 weeks after I started.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I was just talking to Joe Petrosky about it, and I was like, wow, that's really interesting. Like, it's kind of a solved problem. Well, not a solved problem, but scheduling is a problem that has solutions.
Yeah.
But then adapting those solutions to fit blockchain and the specific requirements and the underlying mechanisms is a really interesting problem, because it's trying to shift from having, like, I don't know, continuous execution to this blocked model.
And, yeah.
And so I was immediately asking him questions, thinking about things. And because it was a level of abstraction, it kind of abstracts away a lot of the blockchain specific stuff. So
yeah, sure.
it's in some ways a really, really good first issue, you know, or not first issue, but first big project for somebody who has a background in stuff like it, but doesn't necessarily have the full understanding and context of the Polkadot ecosystem and how Polkadot works and all of its nooks and crannies. So
the core time chain, this is actually a little bit of a mystery to me. Are you guys, is there a new system chain that's going to handle all this? And this is where the brokerage pallet. And that's upon that, all the, or these two marketplaces so far are going to be built. They're built on interpreting or displaying the logic of the broker pallet. Is this right?
Yeah, more or less. So the broker pallet is a really interesting pallet because it has this ticking mechanism that sort of keeps things going. So it's not that you need to submit an extrinsic to start the next sale and every time you have to kind of, I don't know, get governance to say, right, this is the price and here's what we're going for.
Oh.
You, on a runtime upgrade, determine what your implementation of the price adaptation is going to be. So you define your models for the middle of the auction and how it changes from sale to sale.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's periodic sale pattern, so you've got periodic Dutch auctions.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you've got these two kind of functions that are exposed for implementation from the broker pallet and a few other configurations, but more or less the rest of it is all within the broker pallet and it just keeps ticking on and works its magic. The core time chain, this is all part of the minimal relay effort.
Yeah.
So any new functionality that we add to the system shouldn't go on the relay chain unless it absolutely has to.
Yeah.
So there are some aspects of it that do go on the relay chain. We want this to be low latency, especially for on-demand. So on-demand lives directly on the relay.
Oh, wow.
Where you buy your on-demand credits from the core time chain.
Okay.
So that's not implemented just yet for the relay chain for Kusama launch, but for Polkadot, you'll be buying your credits through the core time power chain and it'll be telling the relay chain, right, okay, you know, Jay just bought 10 dot worth of on-demand credits. And that'll be transported to the relay chain, which means that then when you go to actually say, right, I want to use my credits to buy core time and I want it now, you're not having to go through the system power chain, which then goes to the relay chain and adding latency. You're just going straight from your collator to the relay chain and saying, right, I got these credits. Here's my price cap. If you can buy me some blocks, if you can give me some on-demand core time, buy it for me and schedule it as soon as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that'll mean that your power chain will get validated.
Cool.
So this is like approaching the idea of being able to have a service that spins up and spins down.
We're not talking about Core Jam on this episode. Core Jam, futuristic idea.
Research
and development. This is actually coming up. This is actually happening.
Yeah, this is happening now.
Yeah.
The core time, it's already here. Agile Core Time is already here on Rococo and West End.
Yeah, which is just a step before Kusama.
Yeah.
So people understand, yeah.
Kusama is imminent. If it wasn't for the fact that I'm here giving talks and speaking to people, it probably would have been finished, like the Core Time chain before Kusama would have been finished by now.
This podcast is slowing down Core Time?
Yeah, so I mean, you heard it here first. Jay is ruining the ecosystem. No, I'm only joking. Core Time chain for Kusama is pretty much the exact same chain that's running on Rococo and West End because it's configurable.
Yeah.
There are just a few things, a few types to change and some ways to integrate it into Kusama. And then these specific things like the price adapter implementation, which is different because Kusama has like an actual external worth that there's money in Kusama, whereas Rococo is all, you can just ask to be minted some tokens.
And I think you kind of were saying this, but the core time chain isn't going to exist on Kusama. That's all going on the relay or?
Sorry. So yeah, that might've been a bit confusing the way I said that.
Yeah.
If you distinguish between bulk core time sales and on-demand sales, because of this requirement for low latency on-demand scheduling and just prioritization of trying to get to an MVP as fast as possible.
Sure.
The relay chain doesn't have core time credits at the minute. And so core time credits are what is required for you to buy it on the core time chain and for it to be transported over, because without a kind of a holding account for your credits on the relay chain, there's no real point. It's kind of like, you know, scratching your ear like this, where you don't need to go through those, jump through those hoops. So you just go straight to the relay chain for on demand. But for bulk core time, that is all core time chain.
Okay.
So with bulk core time, you can buy regions of bulk core time. And you can manipulate them to fit your use case. You can transfer them to other people, but crucially not sell them.
You can't sell what?
So you can't trustlessly sell a region that you're, say if you buy a full region of core time, it's 28 days.
Yeah, like a block, a bulk.
Yeah, it's like a chunk of core time that lasts for 28 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like full utilization.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can divide this into other regions.
Yeah.
Or differently sized or shaped regions.
Yeah.
Where you've got maybe, so you can split where you split it in two. And you can just say, right, I'm keeping this one. I want to sell this one.
Hmm.
At the minute, if you wanted to sell that, you would need to say to somebody, okay, I'll sell this to you. If you send me whatever, 100 dot, I'll send you this.
OTC, yeah.
So what you need then is to have a trustless marketplace.
Mm.
And so this is where other projects in the ecosystem are stepping in.
Elastic.
So Elastic and Region X.
Region X, yeah.
And so these are really interesting projects, and there's talk of futures, there's talk of you can think of all sorts of things.
Yeah, totally.
These kind of secondary markets bring in all sorts of ideas about being able to hedge against future increases or decreases.
What do you guys settle on for initial pricing? Because I guess once the market's going, it'll take care of this. But the idea was how do you set an initial price? What was settled on? What was the process of arriving at that answer?
So Aaron, who works in Parity, did a whole kind of study and worked out a model that you could follow based on if you use a purely internal model where you focus on the lost dot, so the opportunity cost of locking dot, to allow an auction to happen.
Okay, so inferring from the past how much was locked and
because we don't have any data to go off for the current system. And I mean, this is going to be something that's really interesting from the first few Kusama sales.
Yeah,
but so what happened was we took what we had that was the kind of closest relation, that had the closest relationship to what we're trying to do. I talked about in my talks in the last few days about median utilization. The utilization is for a given parachain, how much of their core, or how much of their slot do they actually use?
Yeah.
So every block isn't full, and even the ones that, there could even be empty blocks, things that only have inherents in them. Collating all of that data from the different parachains in the ecosystems or on the chains. So in Kusama, the median usage is about 1.8%. So that's obviously that's low, and that's what we want to increase, is to allow people to maximize the usage of the block space that's available.
We're
churning out these blocks and we want them to be full, but at the minute the model disallows resale of unused block space. So if you want to have an uninterrupted time on a slot, you can't just kind of dip in and out and say, oh, I know I need 10 blocks here, but I don't need it for 2 days or whatever your use case might be. It just doesn't allow for that in the current system. So using the utilization is just a metric that we can then use to, in combination with a few other things, to come to a price in KSM for Kusama. And so the price that we landed on actually doesn't use the median usage, because we investigated a few different averaging types. And so basically, if you assume that with core time will increase the utilization per core, which I think is a pretty safe assumption, because we're kind of forcing people into it by making it economically preferable. If it costs you more to use it inefficiently, then you're going to use it more efficiently. That's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
So we're expecting that to go up, but we don't know where it's going to go to, and there's no way of anybody really knowing that. So our cap is 100%, and if we were to take the cap, the model works out at about 37 KSM, I think, for the first sale. But if we take the mean, it ends up, that's about 13% utilization. This is the mean utilization.
Yeah.
Which gives us about 5 KSM.
5 KSM for a 28-day period?
28-day period.
Whoa. Yeah. That's
so good. But the starting price is only half the battle. You want to have as good a starting price as possible, but really we need to talk about the price adoption in the sale and between sales, because that has such a, as soon as you set your initial price, you let that market run, and it runs within your parameters, or within the parameters set by governance.
Sure.
And so our multiplier that we've landed on is to take us into this range between the mean of 13% and a kind of highly utilized but not 100% of, I think it works out about 60-ish percent.
Okay.
In the first sale.
Oh.
And so at the start, it's 25 KSM. If people think it's worth that, they'll buy it. If they don't, it'll keep decreasing. And if at the end of the sale there's any cores left, the next sale will be 5 KSM. Mm. But if you sell out at some point in the lead-in period,
at 17 or 10. Or...
Yeah, exactly. So if somebody buys it at 25, somebody buys it at 20, and somebody buys it at 15, the next sale, your 15 is your base price.
And do you inflate that again?
So that's what is going to come to you in the price adapter. So when a sale finishes, you just see like, okay, you have the inputs are the number of cores you had, your limit, the number of cores you sold, and then the number of cores that you wanted to sell. So that the governance can set this ideal number of cores.
That's fascinating. And does the price drop over time or does it drop over number of sales?
So yeah, the price drops depending on the sales. And this is something that okay. is like, this is the thing that we're proposing, but it's really interesting. It'd be really interesting to see how it develops in Kusama and yeah. to get some feedback for Polkadot. So this is something I've got like my...
I'd love to see somebody else like propose an alternate
idea. Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be great, yeah. Okay, well, we'll
I would love
see
for somebody
happens.
Who knows more about economics than me to say...
Of course.
That's crazy, that's stupid. Hmm. Because, I mean, we aren't going for anything insane here. We are proposing conservative limits.
So yeah.
I think any argument that is made will be made for more volatility rather than less. Mm-hmm. We've tried to go for conservative limits because price volatility in the extreme doesn't serve anybody.
Of course.
You want to have market-found pricing. So like the market will converge on a price. Mm-hmm. You want to enable that
yeah.
without having to wait for 50 sales, which takes us, you know, a few years.
Sure.
We want to have something that arrives there quickly. But by tuning it through the lead-in price, you're changing it. You know, the next sale will depend on what somebody actually paid.
Yeah.
Whereas if you tune it, if you like start with a low lead-in price, but a high price adapter factor, then somebody paid like whatever, if somebody pays 25 KSM and that sells out the sale, but then you say, right, okay, we sold out of cores. So now let's triple the price for the next sale. Mm. Then you get up to 75 KSM and yeah. nobody's paid that and nobody's paid anything close to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
Sure.
So yeah. then you get maybe a big spike and maybe that's the right price. But if you get a huge spike and then you multiply by the lean in again, then you get this like potentially quite large number, which will mean that people will say that's too much. And even the base price might be too much. So there could be an undersale, which will drop the price by a lot. And you'll get these big fluctuations, which then slowly converge to an equilibrium point, which you would assume is the market price.
That's interesting.
So by setting conservative limits, you flatten this curve and you arrive at the equilibrium point more quickly is
gotcha.
The idea.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, how long are we going to test this idea on Kusama before we move it over to Polkadot?
That's a difficult one to answer. If you ask...
Do you have varying opinions? Probably.
Yeah, you've got varying opinions.
Some people probably want to get it out.
Yeah. There's a strong push from some people to just get it out. Especially in the community, there are some people who really, really want this.
People love updates.
They're psyched, you know.
But they're not building.
No. There are some people who are building who are saying this is like, this is the thing that will bring them in. Or, well, you know, the thing they're depending on for their system to work the way they want it to.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Whereas there are other people who are saying, I'm not comfortable with this change. I'm pretty happy with how things were.
Yeah.
Got a really good established name in the ecosystem. I'm confident I can always get people to back me in crowd loans to be able to win auctions.
Sure.
And like, yeah, it's a paradigm shift. But those same people who have the high backing and who are established likely already have a good monetization scheme.
Right.
And so, yeah, the paradigm shift I'm talking about is that it's less about convincing the community and going down that route. And it's more about convincing the community to pay you rather mm-hmm. than to lock their DOT.
Sure.
So it's kind of like actively decreasing their stack instead of losing out on the potential to stake it, which means they don't increase it.
Yeah.
But it's like a gambler's loss versus a very perceptible loss. Mm-hmm. And I think that people perceive those two things differently. So
absolutely, yeah. So if I have a parachain and I put up my own DOT, put up my own DOT, right? Well, I'm very much incentivized to make the value of the whole ecosystem go up because, well, I have DOT. You know, it's locked away right now, but I have DOT. Whereas if I have my own DOT and I start burning it, well, I actually want the value of the ecosystem to decrease because I want that to be very cheap.
So that's the thing that's really interesting, that by burning the DOT that's contributed, you do have a deflationary pressure. So the
that's
other DOT
too.
That you own increases in value because
that's
you decrease
true.
The total float. I don't even really necessarily think that it's a negative. So I made a few points in my talk earlier that come from Jonas's RFC10.
Yeah.
Jonas Gerland.
Yeah.
Sorry if I mangled your
friend
name.
Friend of the show.
So he was proposing that, he was making a case that it should be burnt. And it was, when I first saw it, I thought, what? But when you read it, as soon as you start reading it, you think, that makes so much sense. And you don't even need to read it twice to think that's a good idea and fully behind it. It's the main point is that you don't want to introduce a volatile income to the treasury, because having a stable, predictable income to the treasury through transactions, mm-hmm. transaction fees, mm-hmm. through the large number of them, you can predict how that's going to proceed, and it's relatively, you know, stable. Whereas a primary market that is selling something with a model that is defined and designed to be more volatile so that you can find the correct market price.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that flowing in the treasury, in 1 month you get, you know, a billion dot, the next month you get 10, you know, it destabilizes the treasury income.
Right, right.
And so that's a negative. And when you decide then that that's a negative, and make a kind of a thought experiment of like, right, what would happen if we did burn the dot? What would be the other effects? And the other effects are that when you burn the dot, it adds this deflationary pressure that I was talking about.
Right, right.
And the only other deflationary pressure that we have in Polkadot is burning underspends in the treasury. Like, if you don't spend enough money, it's just burnt. But there's no other deflationary pressure. Hmm. And we have inflationary pressure. And so it's good to have something else to balance the inflation. And the third point is that this should be seen by parachains as being an absolute cost. And if somebody is getting money from the treasury, somebody's applying for treasury funding, and they start to think, wait, if I pay for core time and that goes into the treasury, that's going to be paid back to me in some way. And so they'll start discounting in their mind what they're paying for core time.
Sure.
And you end up with like another order of, you know, another kind of another level to the game theory, which, yeah. So that's kind of that's what the burn it all approach tries to argue. And it's been accepted.
So let's talk about timelines here with Kusama. Have the last auctions been scheduled?
Yes. So there have been auctions that are scheduled, and the ones that are actually already going to happen.
Yeah.
There's, can't say about numbers because there are so many uncertainties in timelines inherently in a decentralized ecosystem. So when the PR is finished on the runtimes repository, the fellowship runtimes, that needs to be approved. And then that needs to be merged. And then the runtime upgrade needs to be scheduled, which is a referendum.
Okay.
And so that can take time.
Yeah.
But what we can say is that the aim is that we will time the release to coincide with a change in lease period.
Okay.
So that we're not kind of ending, we're not just killing an auction mid-auction or something like that.
Sure, sure.
Anybody who wins an auction and gets a lease and like, you know, and assigns their parachain to that lease should get core time from that.
Okay.
Because we are migrating all of the leases.
Even if the whole batch doesn't finish?
Well, yeah. So that actually, what I meant to say previously was that there are going to be some auctions that are canceled.
Yeah, okay.
So that's good news because it's coming sooner.
Yeah, yeah.
But there have been people who have been saying, well, hold on a second, why are you canceling these auctions? And it suits some people and it doesn't suit others.
Right.
And I think it's just, it depends on their approach. And
of
I think that, you know, both people are right to have their doubts. And, you know, I'd be curious about people who are fully convinced either way. You know, it's a complete different scheme.
Hmm.
But what there are real benefits as well as potential risks. And the benefits and risks are purely monetary. And so the risk is if you don't get a slot in an auction, then you might end up paying more for core time than you would have if you'd got a big community backing and, you know, didn't have a large amount of skin in the game that you lost staking rewards for. Mm. But really the reward or the upside to switching to core time is that we're starting off really cheaply.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's anybody who's going to think that these starting prices are too high. And like, we've got it defined for Kusama, or at least suggested, but we don't really know what the starting price will be on Polkadot because we want to test the model on Kusama.
Yeah, of course.
So we've got the same model designed by Aaron, where you can put in the utilization and get out this really sensible number, or what we think is sensible.
So core time is enabled, auctions are canceled, KSM is returned to crowdloaders.
If an auction's canceled, then no issue. Everything's refunded, everything's grand.
Okay, nice.
If somebody has won an auction but has scheduled it for the future,
okay,
which is like a true edge case, I don't think there are many of these, if any at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So these people will get refunded.
Okay.
And this is just to make sure that we're doing something that makes sense.
Sure.
Because adding complexity to the migration adding complexity to the broker palette, actually, to keep track of when somebody's lease should start is something we don't want to do to complicate the system. It's such a fundamental part of the system that adding complexity adds, you know, surface for bugs and other things. So
And then everybody who currently has a lease, that's converted into bought core time for the entire duration of the lease.
Yeah. And actually, it's a roundup mechanism. So if you have a lease that ends on block, you know, let's use small numbers. If you have a lease that ends on block 100.
Yeah.
And the sale period's 30 blocks long.
Yeah.
Then you're falling in the middle of partway through a sale.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you get to that sale, you get the entire region of core time.
Ooh.
And so it means that, you know, you got a sale starts on block 30, say. You got a sale starts on block 60.
Yeah.
Block 90. And then in that sale, you only get 10 blocks, but actually you just get awarded the 30.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you also have the option to renew the sale, like for the next sale.
Right. Okay. Because this is kind of strange. If you don't have a lease period and without futures, the largest chunk we can buy is 28 days, right?
28 days.
Okay. And then people who do buy 28 days, there's a possible increase in price. But what would you say? What do they call it? Like rent control?
Yeah.
There's like rent control. It can only go up by a few percent or something like this. Is this right?
And this is a cap as well.
Okay.
So it gives you pricing predictions for your maximum that you'll pay.
Yeah.
And you can renew indefinitely with the current system.
Right. So if you're buying bulk core time today, you could be laughing in 20 years.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that if you're laughing, really laughing,
yeah,
it's likely that that's a mistake in the implementation and would be potentially fixed. But I mean, maybe that's not worth pointing out, but it's, you know, anybody who reads into this will think, right, I want to buy bulk core.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to really use the bulk core, like there are some projects, although the mean utilization is 13%, some of them really use it and they'll be looking for elastic scaling to increase their usage.
Sure, sure.
So they're like, going to want bulk core time that they're planning to renew indefinitely.
Yeah.
And for them, the renewal cap, which we're thinking about 3%, around that figure, for Kusama, which means it's about 47% annually. But you know that it's never going to surpass that. And if the market price goes down, then your price goes with it.
Goes down too, yeah, right.
Yeah, so that's the thing. That's one part of the renewals that might lead to some strange sort of like, I don't know, would you call it squatting maybe? Or hoarding of core time?
So people could still be paying for empty block space.
But there would be an economic pressure to not, because if they're not using it, then they're not making money off it.
And
so this is why the economic model is required. If you just had some kind of crowd loan where they don't have any skin in the game, they can just sit there and, you know, as long as they have convinced people to lock their dot, they could just sit there and like not use it.
Sure.
Whereas in the current system, you have to keep paying every month. Keep paying, keep paying, keep paying. And it's an active thing. There should be a pressure to jump off if you're not using it.
Yeah.
And like, that's the whole point, you know, and like, if you're not using it, maybe on demand is a better fit for you.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. So we're going to have some blockchains, like what's the top three blockchains? Usually Fala, Moonbeam, Origin Trail probably. So they're going to be filling up their block space using bulk core time, possibly eventually elastic scaling to bring on other cores occasionally when they need it.
And also async backing, I think. Just
sure.
To, you know, when you add these all together, you get such great returns.
Async backing, especially, we can do faster execution, right?
Faster block times.
Faster block times.
So you can think about it like pushing things into a queue. The relay chain is saying, right, I'm validating a block now.
Yeah.
Or at this point in time, and you've got to get your block there in time or else, you know, damn, I've missed it. Let's go for the next one. Async backing, as soon as you finish building your block, you just send it out. You keep pumping them in the queue and with the understanding that they'll be processed when the relay chain kind of gets a chance. So if it arrives after the block has passed, you don't need to make a new block or you don't need to resubmit. It just hangs around and waits to be processed.
So what's the next big thing for you?
I think, so what I would like to work on, I've got a few things that I want to iterate on for the core time chain. And I've got a few things to discuss that I think there'll be a couple of RFCs coming out of the core time launch and trying to perfect things for Polkadot and even the next iteration, which won't be a huge iteration, but changing the pricing and economics of how it works, tweaking them slightly, and even kind of abstracting things out of the broker palette so that we can do things. This isn't something that I don't know if anybody buys into, but I'd be really interested to see smoothing. So at the minute, your price in one sale depends only on the conditions of the prior sale.
Yeah.
And obviously of the price, which then depends on previous sales, but you don't have any information about how many cores were sold in the previous sale.
Hmm.
And so you can't do anything like if no cores are sold multiple times in a row, you increase the downward pressure. So you get sort of like a an exponential that builds on the previous few, the previous states of the few last few sales.
Yeah, yeah.
I think with things like that, you can squeeze out volatility a little bit more and have more stable pricing. So this might be something that people don't want. You know, maybe volatility is good. You can make a lot of money off volatility if you if you're the right kind of, you've got the head for it.
Sure, sure.
But people want stability as well, and it's finding that balance between, you know, how much stability is a good thing, and how much is it just going to encourage, like, non, you know, suboptimal usage of, or suboptimal utilization of the block space that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to explore a few of these things and make some predictions about how things will evolve, and then see, you know, backtest it when we have some history, because like we just don't know, we don't have history on this thing.
I know.
And we have some assumptions about people, and people are individuals.
right, yeah. Yeah.
People do crazy things.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see.
Interesting stuff, and a an exciting update to Polkadot that's actually coming soon is actually going to change the landscape of how projects interact with the Relay chain and how they interact with each other, actually.
Yeah.
It's exciting stuff. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing the whole story with us.
Not a problem.
Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks.